Kia ora, everyone. Welcome along to this special episode of Seeds Podcast. Nau mai, haere mai. This is the legal opinion on enabling impact investing. And I'm just going to read out the audio so that you can listen, maybe while you're driving, maybe while you're working, maybe while you're running. And I thought this would be another way to get the content out there. If you'd like to read or see the actual opinion, then it's a download as well. Now, just before we get into reading the legal opinion, I wanted to mention that this is an episode of Seeds Podcast. In fact, it's episode 385, which means that there is a lot of content in the back catalog. Mainly, I'm interviewing inspiring people and getting to the heart of what motivates them to do what they do. So I'd encourage you to check out some other episodes on this series as well. And I want to say a big thank you and acknowledgement to my wife, Ellie Mo, who helped out with the recording of this. So that's the voice that you're going to hear reading the headings of the legal opinion. So we're going to get straight into this.
Parry Field Lawyers, Legal Opinion on Enabling Impact Investing. Introduction.
This legal opinion explains why trustees now have an obligation to consider not just financial returns, but also the impact of their capital investments. There is an opportunity to put a trust's money to good use, advancing the trust's charitable purpose through investment. But trusts with funds typically do not engage in impact investing. Instead, many only consider doing good with the profits that come from capital, rather than investing the capital itself for good causes. A paradigm shift. Using your trust's investments twice. Use income from capital to invest and give out grants, but also place capital in investments that have direct charitable impact while making money. These investments can often achieve impact that is mission-aligned with the problem the funds were set aside to address. While this opinion is focused on trustees, our view is that the same principles would apply to any entity, such as an incorporated society. In other words, when looking at how to invest in entities' funds, it should consider the purpose for which the entity was set up. We are happy to discuss any of this in more detail with anyone who is interested. Stephen Moe, partner, head of impact team at Parry Field Lawyers. And my email is stephenmoe@parryfield.com, and the phone number is 021-761-292.
Contents. Summary and visual example of change. Part 1. Perceived barriers to impact investing. Part 2. A reframing for duties and obligations of trustees. Part 3. 9 practical realities. Part 4. Conclusion. Appendix 1. Model statement of investment policy and objectives. Appendix 2. What is impact investing? Summary and examples.
In the past, trustees thought about how the income that came from the capital they invested could be used to do good. The new Trusts Act 2019, the Act, lets us reframe this. It references the purpose of the trust itself and the need to bear that in mind when investing. This means that trustees should also look at where they invest capital and how it advances the purpose and has impact, as well as what to do with the income.
A moment to pause. Is this for us or not? Are you open to using your funds for impact through investment as well as using the income? If so, keep reading. It will unveil a compelling new way of looking at the world that you likely cannot ignore. If not, then it is probably best to put this document aside and turn to something else.
Next, there's a diagram showing traditional fund management. And on the left, it has capital invested and it's being invested to keep it safe. And then on the right, it says income of capital is used for impact. And that's by contrast to the new approach, which says investing for impact and gifting, where you've got capital invested on the left, keep it safe, but also investing for impact. And then on the right, the income from the capital is used for impact. And the examples we give there for a traditional fund management is a mainstream bank term deposit. It's perceived to be safe, and it's financially driven decision. The example that we give for an impact investment is an iwi-led education startup. It's purpose-driven, there's direct impact, it educates people while generating financial return.
Part 1. Perceived barriers to impact investing.
Many charitable trusts, community foundations, or family offices have funds which were set up to address one of the four charitable heads: advancing education, relieving poverty, advancing religion, or promoting purposes beneficial to society. Some of these entities hold tens of millions of dollars, and some hold a lot more. Together, there are billions of dollars worth of funds that could be used cleverly to achieve more impact. The rise of impact investing has seen a collision between ways of thinking about how those funds could be used. There are also different types of impact investing. Some return market or above market rate returns, some return slightly less than market, and others are done without return. This might be better thought of as a grant. Trustees must undertake due diligence to ensure the potential investments are actually having impact. Impact investing does not necessarily mean risky investing. In fact, our experience is that most impact investments do as well or better than, quote, safe investments. Funders who claim all their non-impact investments always produce a market return are also probably not being accurate, but it doesn't stop them continuing to invest that way. Sometimes the current trustees are aware of why their funds were established and the purpose of advancing those charitable ends. Despite that, they may argue that there are not enough such opportunities to invest in. In truth, there are increasing numbers of impact investment opportunities across all mission-aligned areas, including education, the environment, housing, health, and technology. Some entities have additional considerations. For example, they may be owned by a local government body, who may have expectations about where funds are invested and their returns. Others may be part of a bigger movement, for example, a church denomination, which may have constraints to consider. But the two most common barriers to embracing impact investing for most entities are, firstly, their statutory and fiduciary duties, or their SIPO wording. Let's consider each of them.
SIPO wording.
A SIPO, which stands for Statement of Investment Policy and Objectives, sets out how investment is done, governance is provided, the strategy to be followed, and the objectives for a fund. Some trustees point to wording in their SIPO, which they argue constrains the ability to make impact investments. It is possible that SIPOs which were drafted in the past do have such limitations. If that's the case, the answer to this is simple. Amend the SIPO to allow a wider conception of investing. When making investments, trustees should consider the context and objectives of the trust. These are important and should form the foundation for the SIPO. This means considering how to maximize impact, not just what may yield maximum financial return or preserve capital investments that are, quote, safe. Some groups have expanded their wording to allow investment in derivatives, which are not always readily understood and may be risky. So it would be reasonable to change a SIPO for something much more understandable, impact investment.
A starting point.
As a starting point, a SIPO could identify a percentage figure to be allocated in this way, so the trustees can dip their toes in the water of impact investing. In Appendix 1, we have included model wording that could be used to update a SIPO to empower and enable impact investing. Another way to get started would be to join an existing impact fund before investing independently.
Considering fiduciary duties.
The Act outlines duties for trustees, but it is not a definitive code of the law of trusts. It sits alongside the common law. Equitable principles are historical common law principles which exist outside of the Act. These also categorize the trustee-beneficiary relationship as fiduciary. The trustee has a duty of loyalty to the beneficiary. A trustee has overarching fiduciary obligations. The position of trustee, as the name implies, is one of trust and confidence. There is not a definitive list of fiduciary obligations. The precise circumstances of each situation are different. However, the duty of loyalty is fundamental. Important loyalty obligations include trustees avoiding conflicts of interest and not profiting.
Considering statutory duties.
As well as fiduciary duties, trustees have duties set out in the Act. The duties of trustees in Part 3 of the Act limits how trustees can act when managing and investing trust property. There are two types of duties. First, mandatory duties. These cannot be modified, and they override whatever is in a trust deed. Second, default duties. These apply unless they are changed by the trust deed of the entity. The mandatory duties are set out in Sections 23 to 27, and they state that trustees must know the terms of the trust, act in accordance with the terms of the trust, act honestly and in good faith, hold or deal with the assets of the trust to further the purposes of the trust, and exercise their powers for a proper purpose. In Section 26B, the exact wording is, hold or deal with trust property and otherwise act to further the permitted purpose of the trust in accordance with the terms of the trust. The default duties are set out in sections 29 to 37, and they include a general duty of care, to not exercise power for your own benefit, to consider your exercise of power, to not bind or commit trustees to future exercise of discretion, to avoid conflicts of interest, impartiality, a duty to invest prudently, to not profit, and to act for no reward. Historically, trustees have commonly understood the framework on duties. However, the landscape has changed with the Trusts Act 2019, permitting a wider view of what these duties entail. Note that we have discussed charitable trusts rather than other legal entity types, such as incorporated societies, which have their own specific requirements.
Part 2. A reframing for duties and obligations of trustees.
Our view is that the game has changed for what a trustee needs to think about when making decisions. The Trust Act 2019 outlines the powers and duties of trustees and opens up new possibilities compared to previous legislation. Let's consider three principles that show this.
Principle 1. What trustees should consider.
Trustees should be thinking beyond just financial returns. The Law Commission proposed that the Act should clarify that the power to invest does not prevent a trustee from considering other relevant matters when determining how to manage a trust fund. This might involve buying property for non-investment purposes to help the trust's purpose or objectives. The Act itself, in Sections 56 and 58, gives trustees the necessary powers to manage the trust property and invest that property. Some matters, among others, that trustees may consider include the purpose of the trust, the desirability of diversifying trust investments, and the trust's overall investment strategy.
Principle 2. The purpose of the trust.
Section 26 requires trustees to act to further the permitted purpose of the trust. So trustees do need to consider that. As well as that, the Act provides a new framework for trustees, requiring them to consider the context and objectives of the trust in Section 21. This states that the guiding principle is, in performing the mandatory duties set out in Sections 23 to 27 and default duties set out in Sections 29 to 38, a trustee must have regard to the context and objectives of the trust. To consider the context and objectives of the trust, trustees should think about the original reason for the trust and its purposes, not just which investment will yield maximum financial return or preserve the capital with the safest investment possible.
Principle 3. The ability to modify certain duties.
The terms of the trust can modify or remove some duties that are not mandatory, such as the general duty of care. This requires trustees to exercise reasonable care and skill in the circumstances, having regard to their special knowledge or experience. The duty to invest prudently. This requires trustees to exercise the care and skill a prudent business person would exercise in managing the affairs of others when investing. When making investments that would bring in below market returns or no returns at all, trustees may be seen as failing their duty to invest as a prudent business person, but that needs to be balanced with the wider considerations and purpose of the trust. Also, impact investments are likely to be just a piece of a larger portfolio. Trustees should be aware of different risks, returns, and liquidity compared to traditional investments, so they can consider these along with the trust's objectives and purposes. Most impact investments generate returns associated with the impact they have. Such returns may be hard to measure in financial terms, but might be measurable according to other methods that are focused on societal outcomes, such as education, culture, poverty relief, and wellness. Trusts could even incorporate a new clause allowing trustees to invest in ways they believe advance the trust's purposes. A clause amending the normal duty could also allow investments where there may be no financial return as long as they further the trust's purpose and objectives.
Principle 4. The role of impact in decision-making.
If impact investing also advances the trust's purposes in light of the context and objectives, then we consider that trustees may actually have a duty to pursue such opportunities. When making decisions about investing, the trustees can now consider other relevant matters, such as whether they should invest in impact. It may be that impact investing can further the trust's purposes, and so trustees should invest in that way.
Overseas developments.
We don't operate in a silo of thought, and the principles discussed here are also being discussed across the world. As an example, in the United Kingdom, a recent case looked at trustees and non-financial considerations when looking at investing. The judge started by noting that the charitable purpose is the starting point, but then considered the grounds that could justify a decision to invest for impact. Quote, charity trustees' primary and overarching duty is to further the purposes of the trust. The power to invest must therefore be exercised to further the charitable purposes. End of quote. While specific to the UK in the context of the facts of that situation, it's worth considering their approach. This shows that the duties associated with impact investing are being considered in the UK, and so should not be off-limits here. In Australia, guidance from the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, which regulates their banks and super funds, has stated that a regulated superannuation fund, quote, may incorporate objectives from investments, such as environmental or social impact-related objectives, where it can demonstrate that pursuing such additional objectives is consistent with the outcomes that the regulated superannuation fund seeks to provide to beneficiaries.
Mission drift warning.
Before rushing to embrace impact investing, there is a high-level consideration and potential danger for those organizations who have not yet developed an understanding of why they exist and have not yet ensured that missional thinking permeates all aspects of what they do. There could be a drift away from the core purpose of what the organization was set up to do, using funds for impact, if it starts investing in anything that is good without considering the link that each individual investment has back to the core purpose. Boards may need to develop or sharpen a razor focus on their why as a first step. Instead of being reactive to the need, be proactive. Consider what the organization is there for. Simply adopting an unrefined mentality of, quote, invest for impact, may end up diluting the organization's purpose or even introducing new purposes. Be wary of chasing the changeable winds of impact. They may be far removed from the problems the organization aims to address. This is a foundation-level point that boards need to consider and get right before they start building their approach to impact investing. The aim is to ensure that the impact investment arm is aligned with their missional arm, and the two are working together in unison to advance the core purpose. Impact investing becomes one way of imaginatively engaging with the problem. It's important for boards to be aware of the risks of mission drift so that they can get impact investing right. And I want to acknowledge, and I'm really grateful to my friend Dr. Rashan Allpress, who suggested including this consideration on mission drift. He reminded me to think about the big picture implications of mindset shifts. This is a theme in his just published book, which is worth finding, British Philanthropy in the Globalizing World, Entrepreneurs and Evangelicals, 1756 to 1840.
Part 3, 9 Practical Realities.
In our experience, there are some practical realities to consider in the paradigm shift of thinking about how to invest trust funds for impact.
Reality 1. Change takes time to implement.
Patience is key. Not everyone will be familiar with this way of thinking, so it's important to take everyone on the journey of understanding with you. Involve stakeholders such as management, staff, iwi, donors, recipients, government, or councils.
Reality 2. You have to ask your advisors to implement your decisions.
It's no good updating the SIPO and altering the strategy on investments if trustees do not instruct financial advisors or fund managers to take the practical steps to implement those decisions. Also, consider if they have the professional skills or knowledge to do so.
Reality 3. You can start small.
Rather than trying to make a wholesale change, it might be most effective to have a gradual growth strategy. Try allocating a range without a set figure, or try 2% next year, then 3%, then 4%. Starting with small steps lets the organization learn, and over time you can allocate more as you get comfortable. It may also be a starting strategy to co-invest with others or invest in a fund.
Reality 4. What is your purpose?
This should be the primary concern. It should drive the motivation for getting involved in impact investing and guide the decision-making going forward. Sometimes trustees can lose sight of the purpose and miss the forest as they are so busy inspecting a tree.
Reality 5. Using the tools at your disposal.
You don't pick up a hammer to cut a branch or use a saw to hammer a nail. Select the right tools for what you want to achieve. That can mean expanding your understanding of the legal tools available, including hybrid options that blend charity and for-profit approaches while integrating in principles of steward ownership. There's some links to read more on these new approaches, such as on social enterprise, steward ownership, and impact investing.
Reality 6. Reporting on the impact.
Don't just invest for impact, also report on what that impact is. This might involve using non-traditional ways to talk about impact that is not measured only using money. For example, a report on investing in a housing development might talk about the children who now have homes.
Reality 7. The role of your organization.
Consider how your organization operates and its role in investing by considering this quote from David Gardner. Make your portfolio reflect your best vision for our future. Always be thinking ahead. Be optimistic. Think about the world that you want to create, because sure enough, your dollars and mine, our capital, is helping change the world.
Reality 8. Impact on governance.
There may be governance implications for the type of trustees that should be on your board and their skill sets. It may be that traditional trustees need to step off. The board may need a new mindset to consider impact and understand how to measure it.
Reality 9. Double materiality matters.
A further addition beyond an often mentioned ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance, or CSR, Corporate Social Responsibility, lens, is to look at the impact of your organization on contributing to solutions. So beyond avoiding harm, what does it look like for ESG to internally affect your organization? And most importantly, how do you impact externally? That is the double materiality. If we are right, funders won't be able to escape reporting on the impact of their investments, for example, with a climate or nature-based solutions lens as additional scrutiny.
Part 4. Conclusion.
This legal opinion is intended to offer comfort to trustees that they can and should explore impact investing. As well as the legal shift which has occurred, there are also practical steps and realities which trustees need to consider. That includes making sure the purpose is well understood and that the impact investing will complement it. We hope this empowers some robust discussions at your next board meeting about what you invest in and why. Stephen Moe, partner, head of the impact team at Perryfield Lawyers.
Appendix 1. Model Statement of Investment Policy and Objectives, SIPO.
Model SIPO wording for impact investment. The essence of a cause which can be included in a SIPO to permit trustees to consider and implement impact investing will likely contain the following elements: investment objectives, mission, and impact. All investing has impact. Every investment produces both financial results and also produces a spectrum of other social, environmental, cultural, or other results. The trustees will avoid a binary thinking of either this or that when considering the financial results and these other impacts. Instead, it will seek mission-aligned investing, which has positive impact that is aligned with and advances its overall purpose with financial returns. This will involve both negative screening out of misaligned investments and positive screening by proactive and intentional seeking out of aligned opportunities. Preserving capital and ensuring ongoing income is important, but with 10% of its overall capital funds, the trustees commit to seeking aligned impact investing projects. The trustees will measure investments using traditional financial reporting, but also new methods of measuring social impact of projects it invests in. We are grateful for this summary of the key elements from the Tyndall Foundation SIPO, shared by its general manager, John McCarthy. The investment portfolio must contain relatively liquid and secure investments to enable donations of large sums at short notice and to enable impact investments at the trustee's discretion. And TTF's investment objectives include having a significant proportion of the foundation's investment portfolio available in capital secure but liquid investments to enable deployment of donations or impact investment at short notice. make charitable investment loans from the investment portfolio to specific impact investment projects with community organizations or government entities, such as social bonds, and hold these until maturity.
Appendix 2. What is impact investing?
This is one of the best quotes we have seen to describe impact investing, which is where investments have financial return, but also social, cultural, environmental, or some other return. It comes from Antony Baglevine from the book Impact Investing, Transforming How We Make Money While Making a Difference. The quote goes, "The current of impact investing is washing along the shores of a bifurcated world, still organized to separate profit-making from social and environmental problem-solving. For now, this bifurcated world channels the energy of impact investors into the hidden pools and underground rivers on the margins of mainstream investment and philanthropic activity. But water has a powerful ability to reshape the world it flows through. The gathering weight of impact investment activity is wearing away the bedrock of seemingly immovable institutions and investment practices."
Acknowledgements.
Many people helped review and provide input to this opinion or gave encouragement, for which we are very grateful, including Nicola Nation, Alistair Rhodes, Liam Sheridan, Rachel McDonald, John McCarthy, Alex Summerlee, Craig Fisher, Dan Mazengarb, Chris Morrison, Shamubil Yacoub, Kate Frickberg, Dr. Rashan Allpress, Michael Ryland, Kia Advani, Tasha Fraser, James Palmer, Tan Hoon, Jamie Wood, James Stewart, Israel Cooper, David Monk, and Barry Coates. Now, I'm sure there was other people as well, and I apologize if your name isn't on the list, and you know that you are appreciated. The final page has a link to a whole bunch of resources that we put out for free, things like Charities in New Zealand, a legal handbook, Social Enterprise in New Zealand, Startups Legal Toolkit, Doing Business, the Church's Legal Handbook, Governance for Community Groups, and Incorporate Societies Navigating Re-Registration, as well as the Charities Health Checks, which is a series of 6 guides co-written with a community of about 100 people who gave input on it. If you want to get access to any of those, they're on the website at perryfield.com. Well, that's been quite a whirlwind journey there to read out the legal opinion. I hope it's helpful to have the audio version. And if you like to read in a physical format, just reach out. We are making available the legal opinion for anybody. And also, if you've gotten this far, if you've listened this much, would you be willing to post about the opinion on social media? Help to raise the awareness of it so that other people can find out. You could post a link to this podcast episode. You could post a link to the opinion itself. You could do a social media comment about whether you agree or not with what has been said. And the final thing is a little plug for Seeds Podcast. There's more than 380 other interviews in the back catalog, so why not check those out? Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate your input and hope that this has been helpful. Until next time, ka kite anō.